Hi, I'm Alex.
And I'm Nikki.
Welcome to Swipe Fat,
where dating's hard,
but dating when you're fat is even harder.
You know how I joined Hinge. We've talked about that. I'm embarrassed. I feel like embarrassed to what I'm about to admit.
Okay. Tell me.
So I clearly haven't changed my age gate from like 2 years ago when I was on Hinge.
Yeah.
And I keep swiping on these, immediately wanting to swipe on these 26-year-olds.
But why is that bad?
I'm only finding every guy I find, or women too, honestly, every person I'm finding attractive is like 26.
But that's not, I feel like the age gate, don't they say like minus it by something and then divide it? What's the rule?
So usually in my past I did 6 years.
Six is like nothing though.
It is because the difference between a 34-year-old and a 24-year-old is so fucking different.
Well, but I think 26, you're at least a little bit more mature.
26-year-old me was.
Yeah, but not every 26-year-old. I think you should go out with one of them.
I'm hoping none of them have matched me back, but I'm hoping they do because some of them are very cute.
I think you should do it. Do for the plot for, because like you never know.
But I was like, what the fuck is wrong with me?
And need then like a little golden retriever 26-year-old.
Yeah, and then all of these 36-year-olds, I'm like, ew. Why do they look so old?
Yeah.
They look so old. Or there was this 28-year-old who liked me.
Okay.
Like, you're not 28. You're not 28, sir.
Oh, like they look
you
too young?
You look 40-something.
Oh, other way around.
You look like a grandpa.
Oh, no.
I'm like, what is... And it's not even the gray hair. It's just the dress, what they, like, their face looks like. Like,
yeah.
You know, there's some people who just naturally look older.
Yeah.
Like the bone structure makes them look much older than they
the
are.
Bone structure.
I think about this girl in college who I was friendly with. She looked, her face made her look like she was 40 when she was 20.
How is that? I would love to see a picture of this person because okay, I don't I'll know send, how bone structure makes you look older.
I'll send it. I'll send it to
okay.
you. There was her face. Just
I need
looked,
an example.
She looked like she was like 40 something.
It had to be a combination of stuff. No.
I guess maybe. I mean, like, I'm sure it's a combination. And this guy looked like he was 40 something.
Was he in khakis and a polo?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, that's why.
Yes, he was.
Exactly. Exactly. If you start dressing like Jake from State Farm, you're automatically gonna look like a dad wearing New Balances. Okay, like you gotta change the outfits.
The only one where I thought maybe was like his college graduation photo he still had up there. But he still looked like a 40-year-old man in his college graduation.
Oh, man.
I'm like, you popped out of your mom looking like an old man. Like, that's what that.
Aww.
I'm sure you're so nice.
Aww.
It's so weird. Like, I'm like, yeah, I'm a baby. I'm a baby.
At 34?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, you know, like if I had a child or if I got married right now, I'd be a child bride. Like
100%.
That is how
I still think that way. I'm like at that. I went to a wedding last week and I was like, why does everyone here have a child? That's weird. I mean, you're 39, Alex. You're 39.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone here has children because they started having kids at 28. Okay. Mm-hmm. Everyone's children are basically adults now. But if I had a baby, it would definitely not be geriatric. It's like teen pregnancy.
Mom.
Yeah, teen mom.
I know. I'm
sad.
Following this 23-year-old who just had a baby, and she feels so fucking mature.
Yeah.
Like now posting about but also I think old soul because like the things she's saying about it. But I'm just like, I could never. Like, how are you doing this now?
I do think though, like you have a kid, like you have to get your shit together.
You change,
yeah.
You get less selfish.
Yeah,
immediately.
Definitely, you change a lot.
Yeah.
Seen it real time.
Yeah, you change a lot. Yeah. This actually also reminds me of a TikTok that I was watching last night, and I favorited it because I was like, yes, yes, and it's like you know, there you know. you should surround yourself by all types of people. And yeah, a lot of your friends are getting married and having babies and are at different life stages, which are great. You should celebrate them. But you also need to surround yourself with people who are at the same life, in the same life stages as you, so they can celebrate, you guys can celebrate your accomplishments together that aren't those certain life stages.
Yeah, I actually think this vibes really well with the guests we have today. I had a friend, we don't talk anymore, unfortunately, but like the reason that she started hanging out with me again was because she didn't have any single friends, and it was causing her to have this like obsessive need to find a husband. And it was, I think we stopped hanging out because it was like all she would talk about every time we were together. And I was just like, my life is so much more interesting than just meeting men. And I think at the time I was probably like not even dating. And I was like, I can't talk about this anymore. Like, it is literally
mind numbing.
Yeah, it was, because it's like, but it was all she could think about because everyone in her life was married or had kids. And I think she had this like longing to have the same thing. And today our guest is, I would say, an expert on longing, Amanda McCracken. And we're super excited to have her on.
Amanda McCracken has a TED Talk and podcast called The Longing Lab. She's also a New York Times writer, has been an Elle, Vogue, Where We Found Her, and she has a book coming out called When Longing Becomes Your Lover.
I don't know about you, but when I have my period, I am a super bloated and all I want are some fries.
Yeah, I have so many cravings. I'm down. My body just feels off. I feel so uncomfortable.
Are you sometimes not able to sleep?
Always. Like, it's, I thought I was the only one that dealt with that. What do you, wait, you don't sleep too?
Yeah.
I'm up all the time. I thought it was just my cortisol levels. I've heard about hormone harmony, which can help eliminate some of the things we feel when we're PMSing.
Yeah, I'm actually trying it right now, and I really like it because it contains science-backed herbal extracts called aptogens. Now, here's the beauty about aptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout your life.
So hormone harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it. But if you are struggling with menopause or perimenopause symptoms that put your life on hold, like hot flashes, racing thoughts and low moods, or poor sleep like we suffer from, Hormone Harmony can help with any of those things.
Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It has zero sugar, gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and it's third-party tested.
For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code Swipe Fat at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code Swipe Fat for 15% off today.
Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Alex.
How are you?
I'm good. It's great to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
I know. I was I've been telling Nikki forever that I want to have you on because I was on your podcast about longing, and because we found your article in Vogue about how sex positive feminism is now more about celibacy and kind of like controlling like when and how you have sex instead of, you know, like the Sex in the City, you know, feminism, sex positive.
Samanthas.
Yeah, the Samanthas of the world. And now it's more of this like we get to choose vibes. And I know that then we started reading more of your articles and we're talking about those on the podcast about your decision to wait to have sex until you were in a committed, like, loving relationship. And then I was on your podcast about longing and the whole concept of, I don't know, waiting for something or, you know, wanting something so bad that you fixate it on it a lot and kind of can't focus on anything else. So I thought we had a really good conversation. Was like, I would love to bring that over here on Swipe Fat. So we're excited to have you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it and think about it in different ways, too.
I guess we should start at the beginning. Let's act like we don't know what it is.
That's
what,
true.
What is longing and what is limerence?
Right. So, I mean, that's the question I've been asking people on my podcast. Every person that come on, I ask them, you know, what is, how do you define longing? And it's been interesting to hear from a variety of people, you know, whether like it's kind of scientific, if it's more literary, you know. I feel like in general people find that it's a craving for something, some place, someone that perhaps they just can't have. I mean, and it may have been somebody, you know, that's passed. So it may be dealing with grief. It could be a place you've never been to. It could, like it was for me for a long time, you know, wanting a book deal. So that longing for that, that it can be, it can nurture you and I think, stimulate creativity, but it can also kind of eat you alive, depending on, you know, how you rein it in and what you do with it. So, and then I feel like limerence, so longing, I feel like it, how should I say this? That I feel limerence is a kind of longing. Like longing is the, I feel like a bigger umbrella, and limerence is like a type of longing that is, some people say it doesn't always have to be romantic. It could be platonic, but it more often than not, you hear more about romantic limerence where, someone is obsessively thinking about, ruminating about someone who they want to bond with, that they want to have that person reciprocate their love or their interest in them. And it kind of like takes over their life in some ways, and preoccupies their thoughts when it gets really bad. So yeah, that's how I would define it. It's not in the DSM, you know, yet. There are people that have been studying it for, you know, decades, and I think it's getting a lot more traction now in this like scientific neurological community. But it's
I listened to your podcast about from that scientist that came on. I thought that was or a psychologist maybe.
There's a psychologist and a neuroscientist that,
maybe it was the neuroscientist, but it was really interesting because they were talking about how it's like there's not enough research for them to even, like, kind of define, right? Like, wasn't that what she was, like, saying?
The scientists are pretty careful about, you know, putting a label on it, as they should be, you know. But there are definitely seem to be certain characteristics. At least, you know, like this neuroscientist I talked to said that there are three characteristics particularly with limerence. There's someone who creates, as he calls it, a glimmer in you, just the spark, you know. And I think anybody who hears that, they can usually think of somebody.
Yeah.
There's a sense, the second thing is there's a sense of uncertainty, you know, whether or not that person likes you back or not. And then, or, you know, I guess more loves you back. And then the third thing is hope. So once, you know, once you don't have that sense of hope anymore, which also kind of goes along with this, if you know certainly that they don't like you back, they've told you no way, no how, then often the limerence kind of gets crushed. So that's often why people are afraid to actually tell that person that they're limerent for, that they have a crush, that they have this, you know, thing for them, because there's a possibility it would go away. And it's kind of fun to sit ruminating about somebody. There's some sick masochistic thing about it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, having a crush, because, like, that's, like, what we think of it, like, right? Like, having a crush is fun until it's not. like, you know, you're, that's why it's a, I feel like it's called a crush, right? Because you're like crushed by it. Right. Like, but it's like, it is fun at first. Like, especially, I remember when I worked in an office, I loved having an office crush. Because it, like, got
especially
me through
when
the
boring.
Day. Exactly. And it's like for the most part, I didn't like actually want to date them, you know, it was like more of like a fun, like, it's just like nice to have someone to be like, oh my God, he talked to me today, or I saw him by the coffee place, you know, like, it's like fun. But then when it becomes like a real thing, you're right. It does feel like scary that it could go away, because it's like something you hold on to as like part of your day.
Right. And it can destroy your self-esteem. So, which is, I think, part of the problem. A lot of people say people who develop limerence also have some issue with self-esteem. Like, there's some sense of self-love that they are not giving themselves. So they're putting themselves in this precarious situation.
That makes sense. I mean, like, do you feel like you've experienced it and that's why it's something that you're interested in studying or writing about or learning more about?
Yeah, you know, I think you asked, one of the questions was about, like, why I got interested in longing, mm-hmm. And just the word itself. And, it was really my therapist that I was seeing in my late 30s. I think I started seeing her when I was, like, 37, 38, 39, 40. And she, at one point, was like, you know, Amanda, you know, longing is your lover. You're like, that, mm-hmm. that's who you're interested in. Like, that's wow. what has you. You know, you're in love with longing. And I was like, yeah, ooh, yeah, I am. And yeah, like, yeah. So there was kind of that like aha moment. And I thought, well, that's fascinating. And, you know, and I look back on all the movies that I just adored where it was just like almost crushing. Often there was tragedy and, you know, maybe there was time travel involved or someone you wanted who was from the past, you know, and you just couldn't get. Or literature, too. I was an English major, and I just love those stories that were just heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. And I love that stuff, but it doesn't get me to where I wanted to be, which was in a healthy relationship with somebody who loved me. And I feel like to get into the virginity thing, which I don't think I brought up, I was waiting for, you know, a loving and committed relationship to have sex, and then I just kept dating people who weren't going to, who a lot of like Peter Pans, people who just didn't want to commit.
Yeah.
And I think deep down I knew that, and it just prolonged that longing in me that I kind of had literally in my brain gotten used to. It was familiar. It felt good. It was who I was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it became my identity. So how could I be anything else, even if what I really wanted was to be in this healthy and loving relationship? So it took kind of doing a lot of digging and undoing some pattern making to get there, and working on self-love stuff, which to me at the time when my therapist told me that, I was like, you tell everybody that, don't you?
Yeah.
She was like, yeah, but you really need it.
I mean, gosh, I feel like I could see why longing and self-love are attached like that. Because it is, I don't know. I think because you're longing for something that you think you can't have. You're hopeful that you can. But I do think, mm-hmm. like, in some part or way that you, like, feel like you really can't have it. And that's why.
You feel like deep down you don't deserve it in some way.
Yeah, and I think that's longing in its core, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think when I came on the podcast, we talked a lot about, or on your podcast, we talked a lot about, like, longing to be thin, because mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. that's, like, a big thing for plus-size women, you know, mm-hmm. like, especially if you grew up fat, I think there's this, like, longing and, like, thinking, like, oh, my life would be so much better, or, you know, if everything would be different if, and it's this, like, longing of, but I think, like, in our minds, we think, like, well, it's never gonna happen, so it's this, like, I don't know. Right, mm-hmm. Nikki, do you feel the same way or no?
I mean, the hope is that it will happen.
Right.
And, like, it becomes your whole identity of, like, mm-hmm. I think, yeah, it's the one glimmer of hope. So that's
the
what you like.
Glimmer thing.
Yeah, it's a glimmer of hope. So, you know, everything that's bad that happens in your life, you have that to blame it on, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's also, like, a little bit of, like, a scared thing of, like, if I do lose the weight, then it's, like, I don't know, like, I won't be happy?
Well, I mean, so
like, you're scared
people,
of that, almost?
I don't know if you're scared of that, but so many people who have lost the weight have, like, now come out and being, in, are, like, on TikTok and things, or mm-hmm. are saying, you know what, it wasn't the weight. Like, I mean, I'm a prime example. I lost the weight, and I thought I was going to fix everything, and it didn't fix everything. I had to, like, look internally and fix myself inside. And now mm-hmm. people are, like, publicly saying that. So I think, like, that goes along with almost everything with logging and the self-love thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a total connector. It's a puzzle piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think similarly, like, it's not just about having the relationship, you know, that makes you happy. It still boils down to self-love. Because you mm-hmm. can't yeah. be in a healthy relationship, you know, and treat your partner well if you're not treating yourself well, I feel like, too. Yeah, it keeps you from actually dealing with issues that, the underlying issues, I feel like, that would actually lead to happiness.
So when you, so you were, I don't want to say you were diagnosed, but when your therapist told you about longing,
yeah,
you can't be diagnosed with longing. Yeah. What steps did you take? Yes. Yeah. What were some steps that she gave you or that you did yourself to kind of break yourself out of it?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's an interesting question about, like, right, diagnosis and so forth. So it wasn't actually until I wasn't seeing her as my therapist. So I was seeing, I've been seeing a different therapist. Didn't have, like, a breakup with this therapist, you know, just kind of like things changed. Yep. And then, but I'm still friends with this therapist. So I, you know, we don't hang out, but we did actually meet for coffee as a non-therapist kind of relationship. And it was then, and it was only last, so it was almost a year ago this August. So a year ago this August, I met with her for coffee, and she was like, you know, I think all that time you've been dealing with limerence, and, you know, all the time that we had been meeting, and I was like, what the heck is that, you know? And she also was just seeming to learn about it. And it seems like in the therapist community, it's also not very well known. So a lot of people get diagnosed with, like, OCD or borderline personality. There's a bunch of, and I didn't really have either of those. I mean, my limerent tendencies, when they were, I didn't have, how would I say this? You know, limerence is just like on this, I think there's a spectrum. It can be over here where you're not, it's not disrupting your life. It's kind of fun. It's that crush at the office that makes life interesting when it's boring. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't feel like you really have a goal at work or anybody really respects you, maybe. Yeah. And then, you know, mm-hmm. or it's just like, you just need something fun. And then there's the other end of the spectrum where you wake up in the middle of the night, like, checking their social media, looking for a text from them, thinking, making up stories in your head about why they haven't called you back, or, you know, why they are the one and only person, the soulmate out there, that you have to, if you don't have that person in your life, if they don't love you back, you are nothing, right? Mm-hmm. So there's the two things. So to answer your question, Nikki, I think, you know, like, she talked about me having this sense of longing that was keeping me from getting into a healthy relationship, probably when I was 39 or so, 38, 39. And then it wasn't until several, like, 5 years later that she was like, oh, I think what you were dealing with was limerence. Mm. And honestly, even before I had the word limerence, one of the things that she had me do, we tried several different things. We tried EMDR. We did, you know, trying to get at the root of why I was putting myself in these self-sabotaging situations, basically, with men. Which only reinforced that I was not worthy of love, you know, when I kept mm-hmm. dating people who were not treating me nicely, or honestly, maybe they were treating me nicely. I just wasn't listening to their cues.
Right.
You know, they didn't want to be in a relationship, and yet I was still pursuing it. So one of the things that she had me do, which is really simple, was write in my journal. I had a journal that I'd been keeping for a while. It was like a great gratitude, one gratitude every night, one prayer. And then I started adding to that. I would write every night, I am ready for and worthy of a deeply loving and intimate relationship. Mm. And I wrote that for about a year. I have to go back and look exactly. I think it was about a year or so before then I met Dave, the man I'm now married to. And I thought it was silly when I started writing it at first. And I feel like it did, it took a year before I think deep down maybe I actually believed it, you know?
Yeah.
And some other things that I think I did was just, I hate to say hit rock bottom, but it feels like I did with one limerent episode with this guy that would clearly let me know he didn't want a relationship. Mm-hmm. And I did some batshit crazy things, like fly to Detroit in hopes that he would show up at a concert that he told me he may or may not show up for. Mm-hmm. Oh. You know, bought a ticket for him, and of course he never showed up. I flew in, flew out in like 24 hours. Yeah. It was like my mom was like, please don't do that. Please don't do that. My friend, one of my best friends is like, you better, I can't believe you're doing it, you know? So I think it hit, it really, it meant, I told my therapist afterwards that I'd done that. She's like, I'm not surprised. Mm. She's like, you needed to do that to hurt that bad to realize you got to stop doing this.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Yeah. I get that.
But to answer your question, Nikki, I think some things like that the guy that I spoke to, the neuroscientist, Dr. L. Tom Bellamy, who has this great site called Living with Limerence, he really talked about, you know, writing down things that the person who you're interested in, which is called your limerent object, because you're literally objectifying them. You're idealizing them. That's another piece of limerence. You know, put them on a pedestal, not looking at any of their flaws. And you literally write down all those things that they have potentially done, maybe intentionally or unintentionally, that have made you feel like crap, that have made you feel like your needs weren't met, and or ways in which you've erased yourself from actually presenting yourself as true to that person.
Yeah, because do you think there's, like, part of limerence, too, where it's, like if you like hiking, but you don't, like, love hiking, but they love hiking, all of a sudden you love hiking, too, even though it's, like, not something you really like to do? Is that, like, sometimes part of it or no?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, that could be an example of something, like, not being true to who you are, and because you're so afraid that you're going to lose their interest if you present yourself as who you really are and what you're really
interested in. Yeah, like, I like to stay inside. You know, I'm like, I don't actually, I'm more of a patio girl, you know, but you don't want that person to, like, know that.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one thing about limerence sometimes is that that person, like, literally you're objectified, right? It's not really about, if there's something about them and the qualities about them, I think sometimes that you actually look up to, that you want in yourself. And, like, I think I talked to Candace Bushnell for that Vogue article who wrote Sex and City, you know, and there was one thing that really stuck with me, and I was like, how do you get over the bigs in your life, you know? I mean, that was a total example of limerence, right? Now, limerence also, though, for a lot of people is they don't ever, often the limerent object never even, sometimes doesn't even know that you exist, you know? So sometimes you're hooking up with them, you know, once a month or something like that, and they clearly know you exist, right? They may not treat you like you exist, but and then there are other situations where, you know, you just idealize and put this person on a pedestal who maybe knows your first name and that's about it. But anyways, back to Candace Bushnell. She was like, you become him, right? You become all those qualities of that person that you look up to. You don't need them, right?
Yeah.
It still kind of goes back to that self-love and realizing that they represent, they don't represent your soulmate. They really don't. They represent something else, and that's what you have to get down to.
Yeah, I have, like, since we booked you, I've been thinking a lot about it, and I called it, romanticizing past relationships. Like, I would always, like, my friends and I would get in arguments because of one of my exes. Like, I wasn't with them, but she would be like, you don't want to be in a relationship because you're constantly talking about this person. And I think that, like, is a version of longing or limerence, even though I know I don't want to be with that person, but I romanticize the good things about that person. It took me, like, 5 years to, like, realize how shitty of a relationship it was and not to think about, like, the great sex or the, you know, certain things, like, and compare every person out I dated to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the romanticizing it, idealizing him. You know, however you want to look at it, especially when you're looking at somebody from the past, right?
Yeah.
Because that's so easy to do, like, to forget the crappy things and just focus, romanticize the really positive aspects. And then never let somebody else measure up to that.
I've definitely done that, too. I think, like, for me, it's definitely if I don't get, like, the exact closure I need, which I know is also something that, like, you need to work through in, like, a therapy type situation, then it just sticks with me where I'm like, I can't move on if there's no closure, which is, like, I know that's not exactly part of that, but, you know, there's this, like, longing for it to be done so that I don't have to think about it anymore, if that makes sense. This, like, longing of, like, I needed the top to be closed I need you to actually say, that's probably like wanting the limerence to be over. So there is like this like rock bottom. I need you to push the door closed so that I don't put my foot in it.
Make it hurt bad enough. I'm not going to go back.
Exactly.
In again.
But I feel like generalization, but I feel like men don't like doing that. They don't like closing the door because they want to be able to like do the boomerang back around. When they aren't getting what they want out of a different, they're like, oh, this girl always keeps the door open, so I can put my foot back in. I don't want to close the door on her, you know, because I know she'll be there.
It takes more effort. It takes more emotional effort and emotional intelligence, I think, to do it and do it well, you know? So it's easier just to ghost somebody than to actually close that loop. And, you know, to speaking to Nikki, what you're talking about, like past relationships, they're probably... My first college boyfriend was an example of that, where things just kind of like, he wrote me a letter from literally the other side of the world, like saying, I don't think I love you anymore. That should have been enough, right, for me to let it go. But in my mind, I was like, oh, he doesn't know me now. Or like, oh, what if, you know, what if? And I literally had a dream that I watched him getting married, and I called my friend and talked to her about it. She's like, oh, that's funny. He actually went to the Justice of the Peace and got married 2 weeks ago with the girl that he met in Spain after, you know, broke up with you. And then it wasn't until my, probably at 15 year college reunion, or 20, it was our 20th year college reunion. No, 15. And he was there, you know, and it just about blew my mind with his son. And he came up to me and he said, I'm sorry for treating you badly.
That's nice.
And at first I kind of blew it off. And then I thought, and then I was a mess for 2 weeks, because I think what I realized was like, oh, he took it. Like, he took back control. In my mind, I could still have control over the situation. I could still say, I screwed up. But when he apologized,
it
changed everything. And, it was closure I needed, but it actually hurt. Mm.
Yeah, in the nicest way, it's so fucked up that you were like, well, I screwed up. You were still thinking that many years ago that your closure was that you screwed up and not him.
Yeah. Right. Because it was easier. I still had control if I could blame it on myself. Yeah. You know?
Self-hate?
Yeah.
Wow.
I get that.
Yeah, controlling things, I guess, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think a lot of people, like, with anxious attachment are more susceptible to limerence?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and Dr. L said, you know, for sure that's like a double whammy, you know, having anxious attachment and then developing limerence, right? Having anxious attachment doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have limerence. Mm-hmm. Having ADHD, I should say, or having autism, you know, have some neurodivergent diagnosis. I'm not a psychologist, but I hope I'm saying this right. You know, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have limerence, but it can make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
You know, it can, and it, I have ADHD, and I think having ADHD, made it, like easier for me to hyper-focus on someone, you know, because it felt good, from what I understand. You know, so the dopamine does play a role in limerence and in ADHD. And, you know, it's not about it. From what I understand, you get that hit of dopamine when you're anticipating someone calling you back. You know, it's the wanting. It's not the liking, from what I understand. Mm-hmm. So similarly with, you know, just hyperfixating on the what ifs, and the anticipating somebody texting me back, the fantasizing about what it might be like if I did show up at his doorstep and things, and, you know,
like worked out.
Flew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually doing it is like the interesting part.
Mm-hmm.
I keep thinking of, did you watch the documentary about twin flames?
I did not know, but I know what a twin flame is.
Okay. There's this like cult. This like twin flame cult. And
oh yeah, I think we talked about that in our episode.
Oh well, apparently I'm fixating.
You were pretty obsessed with that doc.
Super obsessed with it. I just think it's really interesting because they're I mean, this cult is definitely preying on people who have limerence. Like this, like, you know, want...
Or cultivating it in them.
Or cultivating it in them. They're correct. Yeah. Like, these people are already, like, you know, like, have longing for a person to love them. And then, yeah, they're using that against them to be in this, you know, cult or whatever. But, listening to this makes me, I don't know, makes me sad for these people. I keep thinking about it. Like, the limerence part of it. Like, where you already know, so you're already Googling, you're getting online and being, like, looking up twin flame stuff, and then you happen upon this, and then they're saying that they can give you what you want. That just makes me upset.
I went through purity culture, like, in the 90s, and did the ring ceremony and everything, and I kind of felt empowered by it in some ways. You know, like, we haven't gotten too much into that about celibacy and sex and so forth, but I felt like, okay, I can decide who and when I want my body. I respect my body, and I'm, you know, blah, 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 blah. But I do feel like that purity culture and a lot of the, depending on the music you listen to, mm-hmm. it can really, like, prime you for limerence. And I feel like, you know, with the music I listen to in church, and just even, like, the sermons I listen to, you know, created this sense that there was this, like, soulmate out there for me mm-hmm. that God had set forth, you know? And if I followed all the rules, you know, I would meet him, and we'd live happily ever after. So, you know, that kind of fairy tale idea, I feel like, was, you know, it was planted when I was a little kid, also when, you know, potentially movies I watched, but mm-hmm. also even through church and sermons and music. I mean, there's even, like, a song called, like, Jesus is My Superman, right? And I was obsessed with Superman in high school, Lois and Clark, Adventures of Lois and Clark, with Terry Hatcher and Dean Cain.
Are you obsessed because of that song?
No. I just learned, just recently doing my research, that there is a song called Jesus is My Superman.
Oh.
But that was the kind of music I listened to some of that music in church, you know, youth group and stuff like that. It was like, set Jesus and God on a pedestal. And then, but the language of those songs was also very romantic, mm-hmm. you know? So there's this confusion. You're in high school and you're listening to this music that's talking about this drippy love from God. And it's confusing when you're also thinking about romance too at the same time. So I'm not surprised that I, you know, fell into limerence and idealized my crushes, like put them on a pedestal and just, you know, spent time imagining what things might be like if they worked out instead of paying attention to the really nice guys who were interested.
Well, and like, I feel like the rom-com was so big back then mm-hmm. too, like growing up for us, like that's like all the movies there were it was just rom-com central. So I think for me too, I also loved that Lois and Superman show. It was, I loved it too. It was on USA. I loved it. Mm-hmm. But like the rom-com culture of this, like, there's a perfect guy out there. I was so obsessed with the friends to lovers trope mm-hmm. growing up, because I think I thought that was like the only way someone would love me was if they were my friend first, because, I mean, there's like this, definitely I have that like a vibe of like I'm unworthy of like love, you know, like we've talked about it on the podcast before. But especially romantic love, like not, I feel like, you know, the other, it's like, that's the thing that's really hard for me, to feel like worthy of. And, rom-coms like made it feel like it could be real. I always was like, I'm the girl next door. Like, I'm the one that you have to like, I'm like mousy. I'm not cute. You know, like I'm Joey from Dawson's Creek. I'm not like the bombshell. And like, I feel like we grew up thinking like you had to be a bombshell to like get the guy. I don't know, does that make sense? And then I feel
the
like
rom-coms tell us that you don't have to be the bomb,
yeah, bombshell. But only in, but you can only get them in certain ways, do you know what I mean? So there was like either you're the quirky best friend who gets the quirky best friend, you know, guy. And I remember people would always be like being like, oh, Alex, you remind me of, and it would always be the side character. Like, it would always be the person who was, like, getting, like, the weird guy to like them. So I always think I thought, like, that's what I would get or deserve or whatever. And I think this, like, friends to lovers thing was always, like, I idealize, and I still idealize it. I still read books, and I'm like, I love the one. I'm like eating up these rom-coms that are friends to lovers things, because I think there's this, like, I think I had a limerence for that, you know, this like longing for this trope, if that makes sense. Sometimes it's like a person, obviously, but then I think it's also this like thing that like you see in books or in society that you're like, you want to happen to you. Like, I still am like, totally. I would love, I've even said that on the podcast before. I'm like, I would love if a friend told me they loved me, you know, like I would love for that to happen to me. I don't have any friends that are guys that are single. So that would be bad. It would be bad if that happened.
I mean, the rom-coms tell you that, I think they set you up. Like, my favorite one was When Harry Met Sally. And I mean, I would sit, even in my late 30s, like making Valentine's cards for others, you know, handmade Valentine's cards, watching When Harry Met Sally, just dreaming that it would still happen. But I think the rom-coms tell us it can happen. And it can, right? But it sets, I think it sets people up for, sometimes I feel like it sets people up for failure. Like, if you long enough, you know, for this person, they're eventually going to figure out, oh my gosh, that's who I wanted all along.
Right.
You know, the girl next door, you know, like, I think doesn't even Taylor Swift have a song? Yeah. One of her songs is like that. I'm on the, she's on the cheer, she's a cheerleader. I'm the blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You know, that's the whole thing.
For sure.
I mean, it came true for her, you know, but it's fine.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. It did come true. Horrible example.
But it's fine.
It's fine. She's just a multi-million, like, I, that to me, too, I was like, if I was famous, it would be so much easier to meet somebody. And now, like, I'm like...
But you kind of are famous, Alex.
Right. I'm like, it's actually harder. It's actually not easier. And so now I'm like, I'm glad that Taylor found someone. I'm sure it's really hard to date as like someone who has all this fame and like eyes on them all the time, and that's got to be hard. I don't know. So yeah, I think well, either way, okay, let's pivot to like, how do you get out of a limerence? Like, I know that you wrote an article too about like some steps to like kind of like walk yourself out of limerence if you feel like you're in something. Is there steps that you recommend, or things that, I know you said you like wrote a lot of positive affirmations, but is there other stuff that people can do?
Yeah, so it was the journaling, you know, with some, that one particular quote that I wrote over and over, and then you know, the writing down also of, there's something about not just thinking about it, right, but getting it down on paper. There's some like literal, I don't know, some neurological transference, something that's that's more helpful, I think, than just thinking about it. So writing down those things, that those times that that person just hasn't come through, or why it just may not work out, or writing down their flaws, you know. And then, but the important thing I've learned too, in speaking with people who study it, is that you also have to have some more, you have to have also be doing something positive to balance that kind of like negative garbage you're putting out on paper. So more of, you know, finding things to do in life that give your life more purpose, bring you joy, with people who bring you joy, and not just get caught up in the fantasy of that person who is likely, you know, never really going to reciprocate your love and affection. They may call you back, they may text you back, but you know, they're not meeting your needs.
Right.
I think those are some things. I've also heard people say, you know, just recognizing it, like literally saying out loud, hello, limerence. That's something Dr. L has also referred to. Can help kind of break it, like just acknowledging, oh my gosh, here I go again, you know, and looking at that. There are extreme cases where I think people have sought therapy to treat their OCD, or I don't know, some people actually have gone as far as getting medication, like SSRIs, like serotonin, whatever, I can't remember what it's called. But really, you know, I think if you're finding other outlets that bring more purpose to your life, other than, you know, ruminating about somebody who is for a short bit brings you a euphoric high, then that will help you go in the right direction.
Yeah.
I really don't recommend people hitting rock bottom and buying a ticket to Detroit.
Yeah.
In
February.
In February. Detroit in February. That's like the worst month to be in the Midwest.
It was like 2 weeks before my 40th birthday, and I was still a virgin. I was like, oh my gosh, this is the guy. I have to like be with this guy. It's crazy.
Like you met Dave like a year later, but how did you, like, when you met him, how did you not keep doing the same pattern, I guess? Like, how did you come out of the pattern of doing what you were doing before?
Yeah, I met him. We had actually known of each other for quite a long time. He'd been married, and I was dating lots and lots of people. And we met not too long after he'd gotten divorced, like on a rooftop bar, you know, through a mutual friend. And we still didn't actually, there was just like a spark, but we didn't go out for a couple months, mostly because he was abroad and then I was abroad. And so, you know, and I feel like, and I remember my friend Megan saying, I was like, yeah, I like him, you know, he's not the type I usually go for exactly, you know. And mostly because he like was so responsive. And but I remember my friend Megan being like, I think it'll be a slow burn, you know, and that was what was different, you know, I feel like. How did I get out of that pattern? I think, you know, I was more aware of my own patterns at that point, which the patterns of not only longing for unavailable, emotionally and physically unavailable men, but casting aside nice guys. And I told him, I said, if you get too close, I will fly. And I remember in the kitchen one time when he literally physically was kind of like getting closer to me, and I was like, ugh, back up, back away. You know?
Yeah.
And then and he went to therapy with me. And I thought that was huge.
That is huge.
You know, like, who goes to therapy with somebody within 2 months of dating them? And he was open. He was, I think, you know, curious. He was, he was very available. So
it
that
sounds
was,
like
that was different.
What you could be was vulnerable with him, like you couldn't be with like other people, maybe.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, the guys that I was really into, there's no way I could be that vulnerable with them. One guy I was limerent for off and on for like 15 years. I visited him in Chicago. I think I might have told you this, and I plugged up his toilet.
No, you didn't.
And I was so embarrassed. I couldn't ask for a plunger. So I like put too much toilet paper down in the toilet to go poop, and I flushed it and it didn't go down. And so the first thing came to my mind is I took off my ring and I shoved my fist down that toilet. And I plunged that toilet with my fist because I couldn't be that vulnerable to tell him that I'd, you know, clogged up his toilet.
Yeah.
So, yes, with Dave, I have no problem asking for a plunger.
Oh, that's a nice way to say it. No problem telling him I need a plunger. I love that.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with limerence, and you can tell me no, but since you were 40 plus when you ended up having sex with him, did he have any, has it, like, what was his reaction to that?
Yeah, I think he was more curious. He wasn't like, oh yeah, I'm gonna be the first. Not that kind of attitude either. He was just like more just curious and open to it. He wasn't also like, oh gosh, like I just got out of marriage, I want to get laid, you know. I mean, he was open, and he was willing to, you know, once we had decided we were exclusive within, I guess, a couple months of dating, he said, you know, I'm okay waiting. It's okay, you know. And he'd actually, this was kind of random, but he invited me to Paris to go hear this concert for this singer we really love. And I also thought, okay, this guy's way too nice. Mm-hmm. And my girlfriends were like, you gotta go.
Yeah.
Like, this guy just invited you to Paris for a weekend? Go. And I think he was also, you know, Dave was more in an adventurous place. He had just gotten divorced. He, you know, he was kind of in like, he was working part-time. So I feel like he was, he's not loaded either. It was just kind of like he wanted to do something crazy and fun. Yeah. And I just happened to be there at the same time. And I remember saying to him, if we go to Paris, you're not expecting, like, sex, are you? Mm-hmm. And he was like, nope, you know? And he was just, I don't know, he was just different. And I feel like that was, and those guys exist. They really do. It's just harder to find, I think, once you get older. And
yeah,
especially guys have been dating for a long time and they're used to getting, you know, laid in the first five dates. So does that answer your question, Nikki, about that?
It does. I think just so, like, so many people who listen to our podcast or people, period, they're, you know, people are being more open on TikTok and social media about being, quote, late bloomers. There are so many people talking about how they've never been in a relationship in their 30s or had sex. And I think, like, it's such an, people are so insecure about that. Yeah. But, like, you show, like, that it's possible and you can find somebody who is going to respect your boundaries and timelines and not make a big deal of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It is totally possible. And, you know, I think I would have, I'm glad I found Dave when I did, you know, but I do feel like if I had stopped these limerent tendencies, I'd consider myself serially limerent, like jumping from one to the next. Mm-hmm. And with a couple long-term ones in there that I still, you know, daydream about and occasionally go plug into their toilet, you know. And but if I had, like, kind of discovered, I think the limerence for me and the longing really was a way of, it kept me from getting into healthier relationships earlier, mm-hmm. you know. So if there had been a Dave-like person 10 years ago, I would have never been interested in them because there wasn't that uncertainty, you know, where he stood.
There probably were Dave type people, but you weren't ready for it.
True. That's yeah. I think timing is essential.
Mm-hmm.
If I was telling my younger self something though, I would have tried to curb those mm-hmm. limerent patterns earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, not waste so much time. I even have like this thing here. My dad sent me this. I don't know if you can read it. I think it says, relationships, don't overthink them as you might screw them up, not to mention the time and energy you consume. He got so tired of me, I think, just like spending so much time, you know, chasing obsessing. These guys. He yeah. would be like, cut bait, Amanda. It's not worth it. Don't yeah. spend your time and energy on this. And he'd set things like that framed, or he sent the like flush early, flush often after the toilet episode.
That's so funny.
So, you know, I think essentially when I think back, I kind of wish my dad had been like, you are worth more.
Yeah.
You deserve more.
Yeah.
He never actually said that. I deeply love my dad, but, you know, he just had a different way of saying mm-hmm. things.
Mm-hmm.
So if he had said, you know, that guy doesn't deserve you. You deserve more.
Yeah.
But he just never used that kind of language. So I just mm-hmm. felt like I was screwing things up. You know, like,
yeah,
wasting my time, right? Screwing it up,
disappointing mm-hmm. the people. Instead of, it wasn't disappointment, it was that they wanted you to be happy, but like, yeah they weren't saying it though. I get that. I think that's a boomer generation thing for sure. Mm-hmm. They think they're saying the right thing, but it's not at all.
They're trying, they're doing the best they're doing they can.
They're doing mm-hmm. the best they can with what they have,
yeah.
Said I gave you photos.
And I was too until I figured out, you know, my patterns too. So.
Yeah, yeah.
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 But now we have, you know, like, we have the knowledge now. You know, they weren't talking about limerence or logging back then. You know, so now
I know.
We can be.
Sometimes I think, like, I feel like this generation is so lucky because they do have resources like the internet. It's a yin and yang, right? Like, where I feel like it's like bad, but it's also great because it's like they have all this information and they can like do things earlier and nip things in the bud more, right? And like understand themselves better faster. But also, like, I don't know, being online also has its pitfalls, right? So it's, I don't know, like I feel like jealous of them sometimes, but then also not at the same time.
Yeah, it's almost like ignorance is bliss
yeah,
sometimes.
Catch 22.
Like, pretty tormented, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah.
One quick thing I forgot to mention earlier, speaking of online with regards to limerence and longing, you know, there's been a lot more talk recently, especially about how social media and dating apps kind of is like fuel for limerence, mm-hmm. because it's this, what psychologists call intermittent reinforcement. Mm-hmm. So you're getting these little hits of maybes,
yeah.
hope, mm-hmm. you know, he texts you back, he liked your profile, you know, but it comes intermittently. So it's not something, that's the other key thing. It's not something you can expect. So that keeps you on the hook. You're mm-hmm. kind of, your mind is always still searching for when am I going to get that next hit?
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know.
Yeah.
And so that also, like from what I've learned neurologically, keeps limerence going. So like social media and dating apps can be.
Well, yeah, it's so much easier to find out about people too. Like maybe before you would have limerence about someone, but it would just be daydreaming. Now it's like I can look them up. I do know what they're doing. I do know that they're single or like they, you know, and it's like just makes it all kick up again. Whereas before totally. It was like, oh, okay, just like assume they're married and like living somewhere. And
right,
I have no
you're better
idea.
Off.
Yeah,
right?
It's like that's where the ignorance is bliss thing. I think now it's like easy to just like be following someone and then obsess about them in that way. Like, oh, they posted this mm-hmm. picture of a flower and it's my favorite flower. And that makes us like, you know, I don't know. I just think like
kindred spirits. We must be twin flames.
Yeah. I think people like go down these like rabbit holes of, yeah, they're my person because of silly little things.
Or that I remember trend that like was just happening.
I don't
where
know that one.
It was this. I'm not gonna sing the song, but basically they were posting about like how their crush like maybe said that they love like a certain like dancer
or something.
And then they would post a video of them,
a story or video
of them doing what their crush liked.
Yeah, when they were like teenagers,
or yeah, adults too.
Oh, okay. I think I saw the teenagers
too.
Ones, which I thought were funny. It was like mom,
like trying to get their crush's attention.
Yeah.
I did see another one where it was, like, the same thing, and it was, like, girls putting up, like, stories I put on my Instagram that I was trying to get my crush's attention with, to get mm-hmm. them to message them back. Like, oh, I put up a picture, because I know he loves basketball, so I showed a picture of me watching the game. I know he likes this hot dog place, so, and I'm guilty of that. I've definitely done that before.
Mm-hmm.
And it did elicit a response.
Yeah.
So or you're like, yay.
You get that dopamine.
Uh-huh.
Like when you post like your friend who like a guy friend, you like get a corner of his hand in your story.
Right.
And it's like, ooh,
right.
Just like
I want him
maybe
to be jealous.
Yeah.
Ugh. Right. Yeah.
There's so many ways to do it now.
Ugh.
Instead of just buying a plane ticket to Detroit.
Yeah, also it's a way of idealizing that person, right? Because you don't really know their whole story. You just see what they're posting on Instagram or, you know, Facebook about themselves.
Yeah.
So it's easy to think that everything that they are is perfect as you imagine.
It's like, really, though, you know, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Man. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I think it's very eye-opening. Even though we've talked about it so many times, I feel like every time we talk about it, there's something new, like, I uncover about my own stuff.
Yeah, well, thank you for the opportunity to get to talk to you guys about it.
Thank you so
much. Where can everybody find you?
Thanks for asking. Yeah, you can... My website is www.amandajmccracken.com. J is just the letter in between. And then Instagram is at Amanda J. McCracken.
Okay.
And my book should be coming out in about a year.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Still working on a final draft that's due in a couple months. And it's called When Longing Becomes Your Lover.
Yeah. I'm excited for that. Me too. Jinx.
Thanks.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So interesting.
I know. I love all of her articles. I'm always like learning new tidbits.
I'm going to ask a question and I don't want you to get mad at me.
What, that I'm limerent?
Yes. California.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, I think everyone has limerence, things they've done that are limerent or whatever. But definitely, like, I have definitely put him on a pedestal for sure. And like, he's not the person for me for sure.
Yeah, yeah. No, like, and I mean, I, like, I, my ex, like, exes, multiple exes ago, like, I realized, like, we've always talked about it with, like, our friend. Like, we had one dinner where our friend got very mad at me and had me crying, like, at dinner about it. And it's like, I don't know if that was necessarily my wake up call, but it really made me, like, start focusing on the negative things, you know, about him to get out of that rut.
Yeah. I think it's hard, but I don't think, for me anyway, people pulling me out of it is the, like, the right way for me.
Yeah. No, I don't think so.
I have to do it myself.
Yes. You have to do it yourself. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to do everything yourself. So
I like it. Otherwise I won't, I'll just stop talking to you about it. If, like, that's, then you won't hear about it.
Yeah. What just happens?
Yeah, with anyone. I don't talk about it with anybody.
Yeah.
Because it's not, like, it's for me only.
And it made me even think about, like, the conversation we had last episode where we were talking about, like, you asked me the question of, like, if I feel, I wish I could, I wrote it down, but we talked about, like, it's, like, just wanting somebody and why can't it be me? That's, like, I never thought of it that way either until talking with her and researching more on it.
Yeah, I think that's a, just wanting a relationship.
Like a longing,
Yeah.
Because there's a difference between longing and limerence. Like, there's,
I definitely have a longing to be in a relationship. I know that.
Me too. Limerence, I admitted it last episode.
Yeah, limerence is different. It's like an obsession.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't have to be. Obviously, there's also variants of limerence.
Yes.
And I know, like, she hinted at that, but I think, you know, there's, like where you do feel like you're crazy and need to be institutionalized. And then there's, like, you know, just a, like, it just gets you through your day or whatever.
Yeah. Well, like, because she was even saying, like, basically, you know, there's certain levels of crushes that are limerence.
And I, and some of them I don't even think are limerence. Like, I've definitely, like, when I'm, when I use, I mean, there are jobs that I really hated. And to get me through the day, it would be nice to have someone who it would be like, oh, I hope he talks to me today. And that would, like, and it wasn't, I knew I didn't want to be in a relationship with him. In fact, was dating other people, but it would be, like, nice to have someone to, have, like, a moment with. And that would, like, get me, like, through my day. I don't, that didn't feel like limerence to me though, because it wasn't obsessive.
Did it go away once you left that job?
Yeah. Or even like I'd be over him in a month, you know?
Okay.
It would always be like something fun, or even like, I did events a lot and, we'd always pick someone to be like our conference boyfriend, but like they didn't know us. And, we would be like, oh my God, like, cause there was this one who was like a beekeeper and I was like, we would always just make jokes about it, you know, and be like, oh my God, it's my beekeeper boyfriend. He had no idea who I was.
No,
you know?
100% have done that.
Like little crushes.
Yeah. 100%. Or like,
do I know that guy's name anymore? Do I even know what his face looks like? No.
No.
I just know he had bees.
Yeah. Or when we're at concerts and we pick a person.
Yeah, you pick a person on the stage who's like your concert boyfriend for the night. It's just a fun little thing. That I think is harmless and it means
that's harmless.
Nothing.
Yes.
When it gets to a point where it's like you think they're the only person for you, then
it controls your thoughts or you're self-harming in certain situations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's her story. I wish we dug into it, but it's like listening to her TED talk or like reading about it. It's so interesting of how she purposefully dated people who she wouldn't have sex with for the idea of wanting to romanticize or long for the idea of having sex.
Yeah,
that's I think is so, so interesting.
I think her book will be really, really good. And I'm
dive into that.
Very,
yeah.
I think it'll dive way more into even what she just mentioned us. We're talking offline with her.
I might clip that in.
Okay.
Right. Don't you think?
I don't know.
Or now? Since it was offline.
Yeah, it was offline. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I would just say, like, what she was talking about then, like, I think that's a really deep diving into her relationship with her father, too, I think mm-hmm. will be really interesting to see in book form. And just all of it. And like, I think how it's going to be is, like, a personal thing.
Like
and
a
then
memoir, yeah.
A memoir, but also, I think, like, peppering in, like... Mm-hmm. How Help. Like all the stuff she's done. I mean, listen to her podcast is really interesting. I would definitely recommend it. I've listened to the neuroscientist and the psychologist are the ones I listen to because at first I thought I wanted them to be on the podcast. And then I was mm-hmm. like, this is too literal and way above our, of us. Yeah. Like it's interesting to listen to, but I just don't think it's not what we need to talk about here. It's more of like a lower, you know, level, like understanding. They were like deep diving. So if you're interested in this and you want to deep dive more into it, like the neuroscience part of it, I would definitely recommend her podcast. She's a very interesting lady. So give her a listen. Give her a follow. Read all her articles. They're all linked on our website.
Yeah. And her TED Talk's there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I guess we'll
see you next time.
Bye.
Follow along with us on Instagram and TikTok at Swipe That.
And if you're not a part of our private Facebook group, join that, too.
Just search Swipe That Podcast.
And if you love us, make sure you subscribe and leave us a review.